This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington.
And I'm Paul Alexander. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
using police to force people into complying with health measure is not only unethical, it's totally counterproductive.
That's Joanne Liu, International President of Doctors Without Borders, talking about trust issues in the DRC's Ebola outbreak area.
Also, lawyers protest in Algeria over the president's plan to seek a fifth term. An outbreak of army fall worms is hurting Zimbabwe, and there's been another deadly bombing in Somalia.
We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The charity Doctors Without Borders warns a climate of deepening mistrust and suspicion in Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo is hurting efforts to bring an Ebola outbreak under control. The epidemic started last year and has killed more than 500 people in North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, has suspended its Ebola activities in Katwa and Butembo in North Kivu province. This follows attacks on two of its treatment centers last week. In the last month alone, the agency says more than 30 attacks and security incidents have taken place in this volatile area. International MSF President Joanne Liu says the Ebola epidemic, the largest ever in DRC, is taking place amid growing political, social, and economic grievances. She says many communities believe Ebola is being used as an excuse for political maneuvers. Liu says the decision to exclude two areas, Beni and Butembo, from voting in the December presidential elections has only added to the suspicion that Ebola is being used as a political tool.
The use of coercion adds fuel to this. Using police to force people into complying with health measures is not only unethical, it's totally counterproductive. The communities are not the enemy. Ebola is a common enemy.
Latest reports from the World Health Organization put the number of Ebola cases in eastern Congo at 907, including 569 deaths. Liu tells VOA the government is painting the Ebola epidemic as a security emergency. She says MSF worries about the disease being framed as an issue of public order.
We think as physicians that it is an epidemic, an infectious disease issue, and that we need to treat patient and not an enemy, you know, of the nation. People need to feel that we are with them and we want the best for their care, and then that they want to be in our center because they believe that's going to be the best way to fight Ebola.
Liu says coercion must not be used as a way to track and treat patients, to enforce safe burials, or decontaminate homes. She says communities must be treated with respect and understanding. She says patients must be treated as such and not as some kind of biothreat. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hundreds of Algerian lawyers, many wearing black robes, protested today in Algiers against President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's re-election campaign. About 1,000 lawyers pressed past police barriers to march on the Constitutional Council, the body responsible for approving the candidacy of 21 people registered to run for president. Security forces were deployed, but reports say no arrests were made. Bouteflika is 82 years old and uses a wheelchair. He has been rarely seen in public since suffering a stroke in 2013. His efforts to gain a fifth term in office in the April 18th balloting has been met with waves of protests. Bouteflika has been in Switzerland since last month for what officials describe as routine medical tests. No date has been set for his return. Some members of Bouteflika's ruling FLN party have appeared at demonstrations. The Constitutional Council must decide by March 14th who may run for president. Nigeria will follow up last month's presidential and National Assembly elections by choosing governors and state assembly representatives Saturday in 29 of the country's 36 states. The ruling All Progressives Congress strengthened its clout by winning the presidency and a majority in the National Assembly. Dr. Williams Wadi is an African Affairs analyst at the University of Port Harcourt. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the likely effects of the recent elections on the governorship polls. He says people will follow where the victory pattern emerges.
The voting pattern had always been that if the presidential election is conducted before other elections, the presidential elections usually will have a bandwagon effect. And if you cast your mind back, that was the reason for the National Assembly, that is the eighth assembly that is now on its way out, insisted at least large numbers of them, especially those from the minority party in the House of Representatives and in the Senate of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, they both insisted that they needed to reorder the polling timetable to ensure that other elections came before the presidential election, because the presidency has so much powers and so much privileges, so much reach, and so much power of networking across around the country, that they wanted to ensure that if other elections held before the presidential election, it was going to give them a level playing ground, as we say in Nigeria. But then the Electoral Act didn't allow them to do that, and so the presidential election held first. And now that we have this victory, I am thinking that the pattern that has been established on the Nigerian political space since 1979 at least will repeat itself this time. And the reason is very clear, an electorate that is predominantly not very enlightened, and I say this not in a pejorative term, but I say this because that is the existential reality in Nigeria. Over 78 million people are unable to decide for themselves at the poll. So if you know that the election was won with just less than 29 million votes, so the point is that where you have a predominantly illiterate population, it's difficult for election not to be influenced, but people will follow where the victory pattern is emerging.
Do you also think that the elected governors can affect the federal government? In other words, the impact of governors on the federal government?
No, the governors don't seem to have any impact on the federal government, because the federal government takes about 52% of the national cake, and that's a very strong incentive for them to lord it over all other parts of governance, state and local government. So I think that as long as the federal government sits at the federal capital territory, that's the capital of Nigeria, Abuja, and dispenses largesse, dispenses favors, and also levies punishment against those it feels are not part of its network, it's difficult. It is not, but this government is always being like that. It's difficult for governors, even those not elected on the platform of the party in power at the center, it is difficult for them to credibly, for them to marginally oppose the federal government. There's no impact. The impact is that once elections are concluded now, the governors that are on the platform of the winning party at the center will align with the party at the center to get more leverage for their own states, while the governors elected on the minority party will have a choice. We have already seen that pattern in Nigeria, where some governors elected on the opposing party to the federal government became wise and went and made friends with the federal government for them to be able to influence allocation of facilities and infrastructure to their states.
How can the federal government and governors synergize to move the country forward?
That is the crux of the matter. The federal government and the state governors in the 36 states and the federal capital territory have never been able to synergize, even if there is a National Council of State, where all the state governors, former heads of state, chief justices, and all that people meet with the federal government and discuss issues. There, the states take their differences grievances to the National Council of State, and not much has come out of that forum. I think that the best way is that it should be constitutionally enshrined that the governors and the federal government must have some meeting point at some point in the unfolding political space. Because the thing is that if the governors of states operate the way they are operating now, Nigeria itself, that is the development in the country, will suffer as it has always been. The reason being that each governor is proposing his own policy, then the federal government has a different kind of policy thrust. They are moving diametrically opposed directions. It's difficult for them to come together.
That was Dr. Williams Wadi of the University of Port Harcourt speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization fears that an outbreak of fall armyworm will affect food security in Zimbabwe, where more than 5 million people are already in need of food assistance. As Columbus Mavunga in Harare reports for VOA, one farmer says his crop output has been reduced by 50%.
At Mauven Farm, about an hour drive northeast of Harare, Ntombizodwa Ncube is concerned by four armyworms devouring the corn crop, despite efforts to contain the problem with the chemicals for the third year running.
The armyworm this year is bad. It's really bad. As you can see, our plants have been ravished by these worms. And we are using so many treatments, but it seems it's not working. You expect to yield so much, but with this armyworm, you don't yield much. Most of the crops, as you can see, have been damaged. It's really causing havoc.
Yeko manager Peter Joseph Dzingami is equally concerned.
Makurisi rinoshika this time tari control, but this year rakanyanyisa.
He says in the previous years we would control it, but this year no. It is because there's not much rainfall and the worms are hatching more than previous years. We were expecting 10 to 12 tons of harvest, but we are now expecting 5 to 6 tons of corn, he says. We have no idea where this worm is taking us to, says Dzingami. Unesu Ushewakunze Obatolu, the principal director in the Ministry of Agriculture, says the fall armyworm is one of many transboundary outbreaks Zimbabwe has been fighting over the past 3 years.
The government's approach to managing the fall armyworm outbreak has been to train extension officers and to raise awareness amongst the farming public to contain and manage HPAI and FAW outbreaks. Further, it sought to increase resilience and enhance the productive capacity of smallholder farmers affected by the two scourges.
Judging from the two farmers' testimonies, that program seems to have failed. David Mufoti, the FAO's deputy representative in Zimbabwe, says four armyworms are hard to eliminate.
We cannot actually eradicate, because what it does is when we are in winter, it hibernates in the soil. And when you put up your green crops where it feeds on, it then reoccurs. So it will never eradicate. But our role is to make sure we mitigate the damage in the most effective and cost-effective way.
The fall armyworm, which mainly attacks corn, was first discovered in Brazil. Experts suspect that it moved to Africa when the continent imported corn from the United States in response to increased drought. FAO is urging farmers to use green methods to control it. But farmers like Ntombizodwa Ncube and Peter Joseph Dzingami say they hope for a permanent solution as soon as possible to ensure their future harvests are not affected. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
At least 5 people were killed and 9 others injured today when a car bomb exploded outside a restaurant in Mogadishu near Somalia's presidential palace. Casualty totals come from security officials and the owner of the Del San restaurant where the explosion occurred. The owner told VOA's Somali service the blast came from an explosives-laden car parked on the street. The restaurant is frequented by government soldiers who control one of the security checkpoints for the presidential palace about half a kilometer away. Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for the explosion, saying they killed at least six government soldiers. The blast comes a week after two suicide car bombs exploded in the city, killing at least 30 people and injuring another 140.
About 300 people, most of them albinos, have braved steady rains this week to protest near the residence of Malawi's president, Peter Mutharika. They want a face-to-face meeting with the president to discuss the continued killings of albinos in the southern African country. Lamek Masina reports from Malawi's capital, Lilongwe.
The demonstrators braved the incessant rain on Tuesday to protest near the president's home, sometimes bringing traffic to a standstill. Most of them wore black attire and sang songs usually heard during funeral services. They also carried banners and placards with messages like "No more sleeping on albino attacks" and "Same blood, different colors." Ian Simbota is an official with the Association of Persons with Albinism in Malawi, which organized the protest.
We have got several demands. One of it, we want the president to institute a commission of inquiry that must make sure that it exposes the people behind the albino bone cells. Because this problem is still continuing because we haven't managed to kill the market. But if we can kill the market today, I think that will be the beginning of the end of our problem.
The protesters tried to march on Mutharika's residence, but were turned back when the police mounted a human wall about 200 meters from the front gate. Government authorities say they could not allow protests at the State House because it is a protected area. The protesters said that was unfair.
If the president fails to make sure that he safeguards our right to life and security, he must just come out and declare Malawi not a safe home for persons with albinism. Then we should seek asylum somewhere because he has failed us.
Albinos in Malawi are targeted over false beliefs that their body parts, when used in so-called magic potions, bring wealth and good luck. Police statistics show that 26 albinos have been killed since 2013, including three in the past 2 months. More than 100 people, some of them children, have faced abductions and grave exhumations. Heather Wickintab is the chairperson for the Presidential Committee to Protect Albinos. He told VOA that the attacks are a complex issue which should not be left to government alone. He notes that some of those arrested in connection with the attacks are trusted members of the society, such as priests, police officers, and traditional leaders.
Now, if a clergyman, a policeman, a village headman are involved in such atrocities, who can we trust? Not even the fathers or mothers. It is a tragedy for all of us to address.
As of Thursday, the protesters were camping out at the Malawi Institute of Management, about 6 kilometers from the State House, waiting for the president to return from a visit to the north. They have given Mutharika 48 hours to return and meet them. If he doesn't, they say they will march on the State House again. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
In Cameroon, 82 couples have taken part in a mass wedding ceremony as part of efforts to better protect the legal rights of women. Only 10% of marriages in Cameroon are legalized, leaving wives with few rights. The mass wedding ceremony is part of activities to mark Friday's International Women's Day, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the northern Cameroon town of Marawa.
Mm-hmm. traditional Cameroonian dancers perform in the courtyard of the Maruwa Town Council. They are celebrating the official marriage of 82 couples, most of them Muslims. Among the couples is 16-year-old Asta Ismaila and her 47-year-old husband.
J'ai été survivante de mariage précoce et forcé à l'âge de 14 ans.
Ismaila says she was forced to be the man's third wife when she was barely 14 years old. After giving birth, she says her husband did not take care of her or her baby. Although the couple split last year, they agreed to legalize their marriage so Ismaila and their child would not be shunned by the community. It also provides mother and child with important and rare legal protection. Cameroon's Institute of Statistics says only 10% of couples have legalized their marriage, relying instead on simple traditional ceremonies. If the man dies, his family members often take the couple's property and send the woman away with nothing. The Cameroon Association of Lawyers Hamadou Hamajaru says with a legal marriage, the state protects the wife's property rights.
La peine privative de liberté va de 3 mois à 1 an.
He says Cameroon's penal code punishes anyone who forces a widow out of her marital home with a prison term of 3 months to 1 year and a fine of $100 to $1,000. If the woman is pregnant or violence is used, the sentence can be from 2 to 5 years in prison. In northern Cameroon's polygamous Muslim communities, men often bring home an additional wife without consulting the current ones. Without a registered marriage, the wives have few legal options to challenge the man's decision. Aissa Dumara is coordinator of the Association for the Fight Against Violence on Women and Girls. She says women who defy their husband, legally or not, are often abused or kicked out of the house.
Au courant de l'année, nous avons reçu plus de 35 cas.
She says only 35 of the 351 abused women who sought their help in 2018 were legally married. Dumara says they were forced at very young ages into the homes of men who promised to marry them, but instead they were battered, forced to do difficult domestic work, or simply dismissed. The group arranged Wednesday's mass wedding for International Women's Day to educate women to legally marry. It's no small challenge in Cameroon's remote villages. Ismaila tried to convince her husband's 2 other wives to legalize their marriages as well. But they said their families were against it because the husband and his family had yet to pay them money or property for the marriage known as bride price. The cost for the wives having no legal protection could prove to be much higher. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Maruwa, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
The Voice of America, VOA.